many of the problems that are now being discussed by modern logicians are, unbeknownst to them, already in the ancient Indian books. Problems of semantics, problems of meaning, problems of the nature of time and of memory. All these were discussed with very, very meticulous scholarly sophistication. So that it is my opinion that this was a very, very fertile period of human history, and that the philosophy in which it eventually emerged, the philosophy of Mahayana Buddhism, is as yet the most mature and really intelligent theory of human life and of the cosmos that man has ever devised. It is characteristic of this point of view that it adheres to the middle way. And the middle way doesn't mean moderation. It means the bringing together of opposites, of what we might call in our world spirit and matter, mind and body, mysticism and sensuality. Unity and multiplicity, conformity and individualism. All these things are marvelously wedded together in the worldview of Mahayana. And fundamental to Mahayana Buddhism is the idea of what is called the Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva means a person who has as his essence, sattva, bodhi, awakening. And it's usually used to mean a potential Buddha. Someone who is, as it were, just about to become a Buddha. That was the original sense. And so part of the Pali canon is a book called the Jatakamala, the tales of the Buddha's previous lives. How he behaved when he was an animal. How he behaved when he was a man long before he became Buddha. And in all these stories, he is represented as sacrificing himself for the benefit of other beings. But since he had not yet become a fully fledged Buddha, he's called in these stories a bodhisattva. That really means a potential Buddha. But the point is that as a potential Buddha, as a bodhisattva, he is always involved in situations where he's feeding himself for the hungry tigers and so on. Now, in the course of time, the term bodhisattva underwent a transformation. A bodhisattva matures and becomes a Buddha. And what does that mean popularly? It means that whoever is fully awakened to the way things are is delivered from any necessity to be involved in the world anymore. In other words, you can go onto a transcendent level of being where time is abolished, where all times are now, where there are no problems, where there is perpetual, eternal peace. Nirvana, in the sense of the word parinirvana, means beyond nirvana, super nirvana. So that if you are fed up with this thing and you don't want to play the game of hide and seek anymore, you can go in the parinirvana state and be in total serenity. However, And again, I'm talking the language of popular Buddhism. A person who stands on the threshold of that peace can turn back and say, I won't be a Buddha, I'll be a Bodhisattva. I won't make the final attainment because I would like to go back into the world of manifestation they call samsara, go back into that world and work for their liberation. So then, when a Mahayana Buddhist does his formula for puja, you know, he says, sentient beings are numberless. I take a vow to save them. Deluding passions are inexhaustible. Note this, inexhaustible. I take a vow to destroy them. The gates of the method, the Dharma, are manifold. I take a vow to enter them. The Buddha way is supreme. I take a vow to complete it. All this is impossible. You see, numberless sentient beings, because they are numberless, can never be delivered. Deluding passions, which are inexhaustible, can never be eradicated. So, this then Mahayanist, you know, they go, Shu jo mu hen se gan do ban no mu jin se gan dan ho man mu ryo se gan yaku butsudo mu jo se gan jo. And that's their formula. The bodhisattva who returns into the world and becomes involved again is in fact regarded as a superior kind of being to the one who gets out of it. The person who gets out of the rat race and enters into eternal peace is called Pratyeka Buddha, which means private Buddha. Buddha who does not teach, who does not help others. And in Mahayana literature, that is almost a term of abuse. Pratyeka Buddha. Pratyeka Buddhas are classed with unbelievers and heretics and infidels and fools. But the great thing is the Bodhisattva. All beings are thought of in popular Buddhism as constantly reincarnating again and again and again and again into the round of existence. Helplessly, because they still desire. They are therefore drawn back into the cycle. The bodhisattva goes back into the cycle with his eyes wide open, voluntarily, and allows himself to be sucked in. And this is normally interpreted as an act of supreme compassion. And bodhisattvas can assume any guise. They can get furiously angry if necessary, in order to discourage evil beings. Even could assume the role of a prostitute and live that way so as to deliver beings at that level of life. Could become an animal, become an insect, become a maggot, anything, you know. All deliberately and in full consciousness to carry on the work of the deliverance of all beings. Now that's the way the popular mind understands it. And therefore the bodhisattvas are all revered and respected and worshipped and looked upon as gods, as we look upon God in the West, and as saviors as the Christian looks upon Jesus. But underneath this myth, there is a profound philosophical idea. And that is this. It goes back to the Hindu philosophy of Advaita and non-duality. Namely, the apparent dualism of I and thou of the knower and the known, the subject and the object, is unreal. And so also, the apparent duality between Maya, the world illusion, and reality is unreal. The apparent duality or difference between the enlightened and the ignorant person is unreal. So the apparent duality of bondage and deliverance or liberation is unreal. The wise, the perfectly wise man is the one who realizes vividly that the ideal place is the place where you are. This is an impossible thing to put in words. The nearest I could get to it would be to say that if you could see this moment, that you need nothing beyond this moment, now, sitting here, irrespective of anything I might be saying to you, of any ideas you might have rattling around in your brains, that here and now is the absolute which than which there is no witcher. Only, we prevent ourselves from seeing this because we're always saying, well, there ought to be something more. Am't I missing something somehow? See? And nobody sees it.
You've been listening to Alan Watts from the Spoken Word Library of the Electronic University. For copies of this and other Alan Watts programs, please go to alanwatts.com on the World Wide Web or call us toll-free at 1-800-WO-WATTS. That's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS. The Watts website features free audio downloads, program lists, and information on Watts' life and works. Once again, that's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS.